questioning, and steered the conversation away. To what? Kaol had no idea. He'd been too busy fighting against the roaring in his ears over Argon's razor-sharp inquiries, and then too busy monitoring every face, royal, vizier, or servant, who made an appearance in the Coggins' great hall. No signs of black rings or collars. No strange behavior to remark on. He'd given Caution a subtle shake of his head at one point to tell him as much. The prince had pretended not to see, but the warning flared in his eyes. Keep looking. So Kaol had, half paying attention to the meal unfolding before him, half monitoring every word and glance and breath of those around him. Despite their youngest sister's death, the heirs made the meal lively, conversation flowing, mostly in languages Kaol did not know or recognize. Such a wealth of kingdoms in that hall, represented by viziers and servants and companions. The now youngest princess Duva herself wedded to a dark-haired, sad-eyed prince from a faraway land, who kept close to his pregnant wife and spoke little to anyone around him. But whenever Duva smiled softly at him, Kaol did not think the light that filled the prince's face was feigned, and wondered if the man's silence was not from reticence, but perhaps not yet knowing enough of his wife's language to keep up. Nezrin, however, had no such excuse. She'd been silent and haunted at dinner. He'd only learned that she'd bathed before it thanks to the shout and slamming doors in her chambers, followed by a huffy-looking male servant scrambling out of her rooms. The man did not come back again, nor did a replacement arrive. Kaja, the servant assigned to Kaol, had helped him dress for dinner, then undress for bed, and had brought breakfast this morning immediately upon his awakening. The Coggins certainly knew how to eat well. Exquisitely spiced and simmered meats, so tender they fell right off the bone. Herbed rice of various colors, flatbreads coated in butter and garlic. Rich wines and liquors from the vineyards and distilleries across his empire. Kaol had passed on the latter, accepting only the ceremonial glass offered before the Coggin made a half-hearted toast to his new guests. For a grieving father, it was a warmer welcome than Kaol had expected. Yet Nezrin had a sip of her drink, barely a bite of her meal, and waited a scant minute until the feast was cleared before asking to return to their suite. He'd agreed. Of course he'd agreed. But when they'd closed the suite doors and he'd asked if she wanted to talk, she had said no. She wanted to sleep and would see him in the morning. He'd had the nerve to ask Nezrin if she wanted to share his room or hers. The shutting of her door was emphasis enough. So Kaja had helped him into bed, and he had tossed and turned, sweating and wishing he could kick off the sheets instead of having to throw them back. Even the cool breeze that drifted in through the cleverly crafted ventilation system, the air hauled from wind-snaring towers amid the domes and spires, to be cooled by canals beneath the palace, then scattered amongst the rooms and halls, had not offered any reprieve. He and Nezrin had never been good at talking. They'd tried, usually with disastrous results. They'd done everything out of order, and he'd cursed himself again and again for not making it right with her, not trying to be better. She'd barely looked at him these past 10 minutes they'd been waiting for the healer to arrive. Her face was haggard, her shoulder-length hair limp. She hadn't put on her captain's uniform, but rather returned to her usual midnight blue tunic and black pants, as if she couldn't stand to be in Otterland's colors. Kaja had dressed him again in his teal jacket, even going so far as to polish the buckles down the front. There was a quiet pride to her work, not at all like the timidity and fear of so many of the castle servants in Rifthold. "She's late," Nezrin murmured. Indeed, the ornate wooden clock in the corner announced the healer was 10 minutes late. "Should we call for someone to find out if she's coming?"
"Give her time."
Nezrin paused before him, frowning deeply. "We need to begin immediately. There is no time to waste."
Kaol took a breath.
I understand that you want to return home to your family.
I will not rush you, but even a day makes a difference. He noted the lines of strain bracketing her mouth.
He had no doubt twin ones marked his own. Forcing himself to stop contemplating and dreading where Dorian might now be had been an effort of pure will this morning. Once the healer arrives, why don't you go track down your kin in the city? Perhaps they've heard from your family in Rifthold.
A slicing wave of her slender hand. I can wait until you're done.
Kaol lifted his brows. And pace the entire time.
Nezrin sank onto the nearest sofa, the gold silk sighing beneath her slight weight. I came here to help you, with this and with our cause. I won't run off for my own needs.
What if I give you an order?
She only shook her head, her dark curtain of hair swaying with the movement. And before he could give that exact order, a brisk knock thudded on the heavy wooden door. Nezrin shouted a word that he assumed meant enter in Halha, and he listened to the footsteps as they approached. One set, quiet and light. The door to the sitting room drifted open beneath the press of a honey-colored hand. It was her eyes that Kaol noticed first. She likely stopped people dead in the street with those eyes, a vibrant golden brown that seemed lit from within. Her hair was a heavy fall of rich browns amid flashes of dark gold, curling slightly at the ends that brushed her narrow waist. She moved with a nimble grace, her feet, clad in practical black slippers, swift and unfaltering as she crossed the room, either not noticing or caring about the ornate furnishings. Young, perhaps a year or two older than 20, but those eyes, they were far older than that. She paused at the carved wooden chair across from the golden couch, Nezrin shooting to her feet. The healer, for there was no one else she could be, with that calm grace, those clear eyes, and that simple pale blue muslin dress, glanced between them. She was a few inches shorter than Nezrin, built with similar delicacy. Yet despite her slender frame, he didn't look long at the other features the healer had been generously blessed with. Are you from the Torre Chesme?
Nezrin asked in Kaol's own tongue. The healer only stared at him, something like surprise and anger lighting those remarkable eyes. She slid a hand into the pocket of her gown, and he waited for her to withdraw something. But it remained there, as if she was grasping an object within. Not a doe ready to bolt, but a stag, weighing the options of fighting or fleeing, of standing its ground, lowering its head, and charging. Kaol held her gaze, cool and steady. He'd taken on plenty of young bucks during the years of being captain, had gotten them all to heal. Nezrin asked something in Halha, no doubt a repeat of her question. A thin scar sliced across the healer's throat, perhaps 3 inches long. He knew what sort of weapon had given that scar. All the possibilities that burst into his head for why it might have happened were not pleasant ones. Nezrin fell silent, watching them. The healer only turned on her heel, walked to the desk near the windows, took a seat, and pulled a piece of parchment toward her from the neat stack in the corner. Whoever these healers were, the Coggin was right, they certainly did not answer to his throne, or find it in themselves to be impressed with any manner of nobility and power. She opened a drawer, found a glass pen, and held it poised over the paper.
Name.
She did not have an accent, or rather the accent of these lands. Kaol Westfall.
Age.
The accent. It was from
Fenharrow.
Her pen stalled.
Age.
You're from Fenharrow?
What are you doing here, so far from home?
She leveled a cool, unimpressed stare at him. He swallowed and said,
23.
She scribbled something down.
Describe where the injury begins.
Each word was clipped, her voice low. Had it been an insult to be assigned his case? Had she other things to do when she was summoned here?
He thought again of Hassar's wicked smile the night before.
Perhaps the princess knew that this woman was not praised for her bedside manner.
What is your name?
The question came from Nezrin, whose face was beginning to tighten. The healer stilled as she took in Nezrin, blinking like she had not really noticed her.
You are from here?
My father was, Nezrin said.
He moved to Otterlin, wed my mother, and now I have family there.
And here. She impressively hid any trace of dread at the mention of them, as she added coaxingly,
My name is Nezrin Falik. I'm the captain of the Royal Guard of Otterlin.
That surprise in the healer's eyes turned wary. But she again gazed at him. She knew who he was. The look conveyed it. The analysis. She knew he'd once held that title, and now was something else. So the name, the age. The questions were bullshit, or some bureaucratic nonsense. He doubted it was the latter.
A woman from Fenharrow, meeting with two members from Otterland's court.
It didn't take much to read her. What she saw, where that mark on her throat might have come from.
If you don't want to be here, Kaol said roughly, then send someone else.
Nezrin whirled on him. The healer only held his stare.
There is no one else to do this.
The unspoken words said the rest. They sent their best. With that steady, self-assured posture, he didn't doubt it. She angled her pen again.
Describe where the injury begins.
A sharp knock on the sitting room door cut through the silence. He started, cursing himself for not having heard the approach. But it was Princess Hassar, clad in green and gold and smirking like a cat.
Good morning, Lord Westfall, Captain Falik.
Her braided hair swaying with each swaggering step, Hassar strolled over to the healer, who looked up at her with an expression Kaol dared call exasperation, and leaned down to kiss her on either cheek.
You're not usually so grumpy, Irene.
There. A name. I forgot my cave this morning.
The thick, spiced, bitter drink Kaol had choked down with his breakfast. An acquired taste, Nezrin had said when he'd asked about it later. The princess took up a perch along the edge of the desk.
You didn't come to dinner last night. Kashin was sulking about it.
Irene's shoulders tightened.
I had to prepare.
Irene Towers locking herself in the Torre to work? I might die of shock.
From the princess's tone, he filled in enough. The best healer in the Torre Chesme had become so thanks to that grueling work ethic. Hassar looked him over.
Still in the chair?
Healing takes time,
Irene said mildly to the princess. Not an ounce of subservience or respect to the tone.
We were just beginning.
So, you agreed to do it then?
Irene cut the princess a sharp glare.
We were assessing the Lord's needs.
She jerked her chin toward the doors.
Shall I find you when I'm done?
Nezrin gave Kaol an impressed, wary glance. A healer dismissing a princess of the most powerful empire in the world. Hassar leaned forward to ruffle Irene's gold-brown hair.
If you weren't God's blessed, I'd carve out your tongue myself.
The words were honeyed venom. Irene only offered a faint, bemused smile before Hassar hopped off the desk and gave him a mocking incline of the head.
Don't worry, Lord Westfall. Irene has healed injuries similar and far worse than your own. She'll have you back on your feet and able to do your master's bidding again in no time.
With that lovely parting shot, which left Nezrin cold-eyed, the princess vanished. They waited a good few moments to make sure they heard the outer door shut.
Irene Towers,
was all Kaol said.
What of it?
Gone was the faint amusement. Fine. The lack of feeling and movement begins at my hips.
Irene's eyes shot right to them, dancing over him. Are you capable of using your manhood?
He tried not to flinch. Even Nezrin blinked at the frank question.
Yes,
he said tightly, fighting the heat rising in his cheeks. She looked between them, assessing.
Have you used it to completion?
He clenched his jaw.
How is that relevant?
And how had she gleaned what was between them? Irene only wrote something down.
What are you writing?
He demanded, cursing the damned chair for keeping him from storming to rip the paper out of her hands.
I'm writing a giant no,
which she then underlined. He growled.
I suppose you'll ask about my bathroom habits now?
It was next on my list.
They are unchanged,
he bit out.
Unless you need Nezrin to confirm.
Irene merely turned to Nezrin, unruffled.
Have you seen him struggle with it?
Do not answer that,
he snarled at Nezrin.
Nezrin had the good wits to sink into a chair and remain quiet.
Irene rose, setting down the pen, and came around the desk. The morning sunlight caught in her hair, bouncing off her head in a corona. She knelt at his feet.
Shall you remove your boots, or shall I?
I'll do it.
She sat back on her heels and watched him move. Another test, to discern how mobile and agile he was. The weight of his legs, having to constantly adjust their position. Kaol gritted his teeth as he gripped his knee, lifting his foot off the wooden slat, and bent to remove his boot in a few sharp tugs. When he finished with the other one, he asked,
Pants, too?
Kaol knew he should be kind, should beseech her to help him. And yet,
after a drink or two, I think,
Irene only said. Then she looked over her shoulder to a bemused Nezrin.
Sorry,
she added, and sounded only slightly less sharp-tongued.
Why are you apologizing to her?
I assume she has the misfortune of sharing your bed these days.
It took his self-restraint to keep from going for her shoulders and shaking her soundly.
Have I done something to you?
That seemed to give her pause. Irene only yanked off his socks, throwing them atop where he'd discarded his boots.
No.
A lie. He scented and tasted it. But it focused her, and Kaol watched as Irene picked up his foot in her slim hands. Watched, since he didn't feel it, beyond the shift in his abdominal muscles. He couldn't tell if she was squeezing or holding lightly, if her nails were digging in. Not without looking. So he did. A ring adorned her fourth finger, a wedding band.
Is your husband from here?
Or wife, he supposed.
I'm not.
She blinked, frowning at the ring. She didn't finish the sentence. Not married, then.
The silver ring was simple, the garnet no more than a droplet, likely worn to keep men from bothering her,
as he'd seen many women do in the streets of Rifthold.
Can you feel this?
Irene asked. She was touching each toe.
No.
She did it on the other foot.
And this?
No.
He'd been through such examinations before, at the castle and with Rowan.
His initial injury,
Nezrin cut in, as if remembering the prince as well,
was to the entire spine. A friend had some knowledge of healing and patched him up as best he could. He regained movement in his upper body, but not below the hips.
How was it attained, the injury? Her hands were moving over his foot and ankle, tapping and testing, as if she'd indeed done this before, as Princess Hassar had claimed. Kaol didn't immediately reply, sorting through those moments of terror and pain and rage. Nezrin opened her mouth, but he cut her off.
Fighting. I received a blow to my back while fighting. A magical one.
Irene's fingers were inching up his legs, patting and squeezing. He felt none of it. Her brows bunched in concentration.
Your friend must have been a gifted healer if he regained so much motion.
He did what he could. Then he told me to come here.
Her hands pushed and pressed on his thighs, and he watched with no small amount of growing horror as she slid them higher and higher. He was about to demand if she planned to ascertain for herself about the life in his manhood. But Irene lifted her head and met his stare. This close, her eyes were a golden flame. Not like the cold metal of Manon Blackbeak's, not laced with a century of violence and predator's instincts, but like a long-burning flame on a winter's night.
I need to see your back,
was all Irene said. Then she peeled away.
Lie down on the nearest bed.
Before Kaol could remind her that it wasn't quite so easy to do that, Nezrin was instantly in motion, wheeling him into his room. Kaja had already made his bed and left a bouquet of orange lilies on the table beside it. Irene sniffed at the scent, as if it was unpleasant. He refrained from asking. He waved off Nezrin when she tried to help him onto the bed. It was low enough that he could manage. Irene lingered in the doorway, observing while he braced one hand on the mattress, one on the arm of the chair, and in a powerful push, heaved himself into a sitting position on the bed. He unbuckled each of those newly polished buttons on his jacket, then peeled it off, along with the white shirt beneath.
Face down, I assume.
Irene gave him a curt nod. Gripping his knees, abdomen clenching, he pulled his legs onto the mattress as he lay flat on his back. For a few heartbeats, spasms shook his legs. Not real controlled motion, he'd realized after the first time it had happened weeks ago. He could still feel that crushing weight in his chest, after he'd understood it was some effect of the injury, that it usually happened if he moved himself about a great deal.
Spasms in the legs are common with such an injury,
Irene supplied, observing them fade away into stillness once again.
These may calm with time.
She waved a hand to him in silent reminder to turn over onto his belly. Kaol said nothing as he sat up to fold one ankle over the other, lay down again on his back, and then twisted over, his legs following suit. Whether she was impressed that he'd picked up on the maneuverings so quickly, she didn't let on. Didn't even lift a brow. Folding his hands under his chin, he peered over his shoulder and watched her approach. Watched her motion Nezrin to sit when the woman began pacing again. He scanned Irene for any sort of flickering magic. What it'd look like, he had not the faintest inkling. Dorian's had been ice and wind and flashing light. Aelin's had been raging, singing flame. But healing magic? Was it something external? Something tangible? Or something only his bones and blood might witness? He'd once balked at those sorts of questions. Might once have even balked at the idea of letting magic touch him. But the man who had done those things? Feared those things? He was glad to leave him in the shattered ruin of the glass castle. Irene stood over him for a moment, surveying his back. Her hands were as warm as the morning sun when she laid them palm down on the skin between his shoulder blades.
You were hit here,
she observed quietly. There was a mark, a faint splattering paleness to his skin where the king's blow had hit. Dorian had shown him using a trick with two hand mirrors before he'd left.
Yes.
Her hands trailed along the groove of his spine.
It rippled down here, shredding and severing.
The words were not for him, but as if she were speaking to herself, lost in some trance. He fought against the memory of that pain, the numbness and oblivion it summoned.
You can tell that?
Nezrin asked.
My gift tells me.
Irene's hand stalled along the middle of his back, pushing and prodding.
It was terrible power. What struck you?
Yes, was all he said.
Her hands went lower.
Lower?
Until they shoved down the waist of his pants a few inches.
He hissed through his teeth and glared over his bare shoulder. A little warning.
Irene ignored him and touched the lowest part of his back. He did not feel it. She spider-walked her fingers up his spine, as if counting the vertebrae.
Here?
I can feel you.
She backtracked one step.
Here?
Nothing.
Her face bunched, as if making a mental note of the location. She began on the outer edges of his back, creeping up, asking where he stopped feeling it. She took his neck and head in her hands, turning it this way and that, testing and assessing. Finally, she ordered him to move. Not to rise, but to turn over again. Kaol stared up at the arched painted ceiling, as Irene poked and prodded his pectorals, the muscles of his abdomen, those along his ribs. She reached the V of muscles leading beneath his pants, kept moving lower, and he demanded,
"Really?"
Irene shot him an incredulous look.
"Is there something you're particularly embarrassed for me to see?"
Oh, she certainly had some fight in her, this Irene Towers from Fenharrow.
Kaol held her stare, the challenge in it.
Irene only snorted.
"I had forgotten that men from the northern continent are so proper and guarded."
"And here they are not?"
"No. Bodies are celebrated, not shamed into hiding. Men and women, both."
That would explain the servant who had no qualms about such things.
"They seemed plenty dressed at dinner."
"Wait until the parties,"
Irene countered coolly. But she lifted her hands from the already low waist of his pants.
"If you have not noticed any problems externally or internally with your manhood, then I don't need to look."
He shoved against the feeling that he was again 13 years old and trying to talk to a pretty girl for the first time, and ground out,
"Fine."
Irene withdrew a step and handed him his shirt. He sat up, arms and abdominal muscles straining, and slid it on.
"Well?"
Nezrin asked, stalking close. Irene toyed with a heavy, loose curl.
"I need to think. Talk to my superior."
"I thought you were the best,"
Nezrin said carefully.
"I am one of many who are skilled,"
Irene admitted.
"But the healer on high assigned me to this. I should like to speak to her first."
"Is it bad?"
Nezrin demanded. He was grateful she did. He didn't have the nerve to. Irene only looked to him, her gaze frank and unafraid.
"You know it is bad."
"But can you help him?"
Nezrin pushed, sharper this time.
"I have healed such injuries before. But this, it remains to be seen,"
Irene said, meeting her gaze now.
When will you know?"
"When I have had time to think."
To decide, Kaol realized. She wanted to decide whether to help him. He held Irene's stare again, letting her see that he at least understood. He was glad Nezrin had not entertained the idea. He had a feeling Irene would be face first against the wall if she did. But for Nezrin, the healers were beyond reproach. Holy as one of the gods here, their ethic unquestionable.
"When will you return?"
Nezrin asked.
"Never," he almost answered.
Irene slid her hands into her pockets.
"I'll send word,"
was all she said, and left. Nezrin stared after her, then rubbed her face. Kaol said nothing. But Nezrin straightened, then dashed out to the sitting room, rustling paper, and then Nezrin halted in the doorway to his room, brows crossed, Irene's paper in her hands. She handed it to him.
"What does this even mean?"
There were four names written on the paper. Her handwriting messy. Ognia, Marta, Rosanna, Josephine. It was the final name that had been written down several times. The final name that had been underlined over and over. Josephine, Josephine, Josephine.
Perhaps there are other healers in the Torre who could help.
He lied.
Perhaps she fears spies overhearing her suggest someone else.
Nezrin's mouth quirked to the side. Let's see what she says when she returns. At least we know Hasar can track her down if need be. Or Caution, whose very name had set the healer on edge. Not that he'd force Irene to work on him, but it was useful information. Kaol studied the paper again. The fervent underlining of that final name. As if Irene had needed to remind herself while here, in his presence. As if she needed whoever they were to know that she remembered them. He had met another talented young healer from Fen Harrow. His king had loved her enough to consider fleeing with her, to seek a better life for them. Kaol knew what had gone on in Fen Harrow during their youth. Knew what Sorsha had endured there, and what she'd endured in Rifthold. He'd ridden through Fen Harrow's scarred grasslands over the years. Had seen the burned or abandoned stone cottages, their thatched roofs long since gone. Owners either enslaved, dead, or fled elsewhere. Far, far away. No, Kaol realized, as he held that piece of paper. Irene Towers would not be returning.
Chapter 6. She'd known his age, but Irene had still not expected the former captain to look so young. She hadn't done the math until she'd walked into that room and seen his handsome face, a mix of caution and hope written across the hardened, broad features. It was that hope that had made her see red, had made her ache to give him a matching scar to the slender one slicing across his cheek. She'd been unprofessional in the most horrific sense. Never, never had she been so rude and unkind toward any of her patients. Mercifully, Hasar had arrived, cooling her head slightly. But touching the man? Thinking of ways to help him? She had not meant to write the list of the last four generations of Towers women. Had not meant to write her mother's name over and over while pretending to record his information. It had not helped with the overwhelming roaring in her head. Sweating and dusty, Irene burst into Hafiza's office nearly an hour later. The trek from the palace through the clogged narrow streets, then the endless steps up here, taking an eternity. She'd been late. That had been her first truly unprofessional moment. She'd never been late to an appointment. Yet right at 10, she'd found herself in an alcove of the hallway outside his bedroom. Hands over her face, struggling to breathe. He hadn't been the brute she'd expected. He'd spoken well, more lord than soldier, though his body had most certainly belonged to the latter. She had patched up and healed enough of the Coggins' favored warriors to know the feel of muscle beneath her fingers. The scars covering Lord Westfall's tan skin spoke volumes about how the muscles had been earned the hard way. And now aided him in maneuvering through the world with the chair. And the injury to his spine. As Irene halted at the threshold of the healer on High's office, Hafiza looked up from where she sat beside a sniffling acolyte. I need a word, Irene said tightly, one hand gripping the door jamb. You shall have one when we are done, Hafiza simply replied, handing a handkerchief to the weepy girl. Some male healers existed, but the majority of those who received Silba's gift were female. And this girl, likely no more than 14. Irene had been laboring on her cousin's farm at that age, dreaming of being here. Certainly not crying to anyone about her sorry lot in life. But Irene walked out, shutting the door behind her, and waited against the wall on the narrow landing.
There were two other doors up here. One locked that led into Hafiza's personal workshop, and a door that led into the healer on High's bedroom. The former carved with an owl taking flight, the latter with an owl at rest. Silba's symbol. It was everywhere in the tower. Owls carved and embossed in the stone and wood, sometimes in unexpected places and with silly little expressions, as if some long-ago acolyte had etched them as a secret joke. But the owl on the healer on High's private workshop? Even though it perched atop a gnarled branch of iron that flowed across the door itself, wings flared wide as it prepared to leap into the skies, it seemed alert, aware of all who passed that door, who perhaps gazed too long in the direction of the workshop. None but Hafiza possessed the key to it, handed down by her predecessor. Ancient, half-forgotten knowledge and devices lay within, the acolytes whispered. Unnatural things that were better locked up than set loose in the world. Irene always laughed at their hushed words, but didn't tell them she and a few select others had been granted the pleasure of joining Hafiza in that workshop, which, save for the sheer age of some of the tools and furniture, held nothing worth gossiping about. But the mystery of the healer on High's workshop persisted, as it had likely done for centuries, yet another well-loved myth of the Torre, passed on from acolyte to acolyte. Irene fanned her face, still out of breath from the climb and the heat. She leaned her head back against the cool stone, and again felt for the scrap of paper in her pocket. She wondered if the Lord had noticed how often she'd grabbed that stranger's note. If he'd thought she was reaching for a weapon. He'd seen everything, been aware of her every breath. A man trained for it. He had to be if he'd served the dead king. Just as Nezrin Falik, a child of this continent, now served the king of a territory that had not treated outsiders very well at all. Irene could not make sense of it. There was some romantic bond, she knew from both the tension and comfort between them. But to what degree? It didn't matter, save for the emotional healing the Lord would need as well. A man not used to voicing his feelings, his fears and hopes and hurts. That much was obvious. The door to Hafiza's office opened at last, and the acolyte emerged, smiling apologetically at Irene, red-nosed and glassy-eyed. Irene sighed through her nose and offered a smile back. She was not the person who had just barged into the office. No. Even busy as she was, Irene had always taken time for the acolytes, the homesick ones especially. No one had sat beside her in the mess hall below during those initial days. Irene still remembered those lonely meals. Remembered that she'd broken after 2 days, and began taking her food to the vast healer's library below ground, hiding from the stiff-backed librarians who forbade such things, with only the occasional mercurial bastcat and carved owl for company. Irene had returned to the mess hall once her lessons had garnered enough acquaintances to make the prospect of finding a place to sit less daunting. Spotting familiar and smiling faces, giving her enough courage to leave the library, and its enigmatic cats behind, for anything but research. Irene touched the acolyte on the shoulder and whispered, "Cook made almond cookies this morning. I smelled them on the way out. Tell her I want 6, but take 4 of those for yourself." She winked at the girl. "Leave the other 2 for me at my room." The girl beamed, nodding. Cook was perhaps Irene's first friend in the Torre. She'd spied Irene eating alone and began sneaking extra treats onto her tray, leaving them in her room, even in her favorite secret spot in the library. Irene had repaid Cook last year by saving her granddaughter from an insidious lung sickness that had crept up on her. Cook still got weepy whenever they ran into each other. And Irene had made it a point to stop by the girl's house once a month to check on her. When she left, she'd have to ask someone to look after the girl. Cleaving herself from this life she'd built. It would be no easy task, and come with no small amount of guilt.
Irene watched the still sniffling acolyte hop down the wide spiral stairs, then took a deep breath and strode into Hafiza's office.
"Will the young lord walk again?"
Hafiza asked by way of greeting, white brows high on her forehead. Irene slid into her usual chair, the seat still warm from the girl who'd just vacated it.
"He will. The injury is nearly twin to the one I healed last winter. But it will be tricky."
"In regard to the healing, or you?"
Irene blushed. "I behaved poorly."
"That was to be expected."
Irene wiped the sweat from her brow.
"I'm embarrassed to tell you how badly."
"Then don't. Do better the next time, and we'll consider this another lesson."
Irene sagged in her chair, stretching her aching legs on the worn carpet. No matter how Hafiza's servants begged, she refused to change the red and green rug. It had been good enough for the last 5 of her predecessors, and it was good enough for her. Irene leaned her head against the soft back of the chair, staring at the cloudless day beyond the open windows.
"I think I can heal him," she said,
more to herself than Hafiza.
"If he cooperates, I could get him walking again."
"And will he cooperate?"
"I was not the only one who behaved poorly," she said. "Though he's from Otterlin, it could be his nature."
Hafiza huffed a laugh.
"When do you return to him?"
Irene hesitated.
"You will return, won't you?"
Hafiza pushed. Irene picked at the sun-blanched threads of the chair's arm.
It was hard. Hard to look at him, hear his accent, and...
She stilled her hand.
"But you are right. I shall try, if only so Otterlin may never hold it against me."
"Do you expect them to?"
"He has powerful friends who might remember. His companion is the new captain of the guard. Her family hails from here, yet she serves them."
"And what does that tell you?"
"Always a lesson. Always a test."
"It tells me..."
Irene blew out a breath.
"It tells me I don't know as much as I assumed."
She straightened.
"But it also doesn't forgive them of any sins."
Yet she had met plenty of bad people in her life. Lived among them, served them in Inish. She had taken one look at Lord Westfall's brown eyes and had known deep down he was not one of them. Neither was his companion. And with his age, he had been a boy when so many of those atrocities had been committed. He still could have played some part, and plenty more had been done in recent years, enough to make her ill at the thought. "But the injury to his spine," Irene said. "He claims some foul magic did it." Her magic had recoiled against the splattered mark, curved away.
"Oh?"
She shivered.
I've never felt anything like that. As if it was rotted, yet empty, cold as the longest winter night."
"I shall have to take your word on that one."
Irene snorted, grateful for the dry humor. Indeed, Hafiza had never so much as seen snow. With Antica's year-round warm climate, the closest they'd gotten to winter these 2 years was perhaps a crust of frost sparkling over the lavender and lemon trees one morning.
"It was..."
Irene brushed off the memory of the echo still held within that scar.
"It was not any magic wound I had encountered before."
"Will it impact the healing of his spine?"
"I don't know. I haven't tried to probe with my power yet, but I'll let you know.
I'm at your disposal."
"Even if this is my final test?"
"A good healer,"
Hafiza said with a smile,
"knows when to ask for help."
Irene nodded absently, and when she sailed back home, to war and bloodshed, who would she turn to then?
"I'll go back,"
Irene said at last.
tomorrow. I want to look into spinal injuries and paralysis in the library tonight.
I'll let Cook know where to find you.
Irene gave Hafiza a wry grin. Nothing escapes you, does it? Hafiza's knowing look wasn't comforting. The healer didn't return that day. Nezrin waited for another hour, then two, Kaol filling his time with reading in the sitting room, before she finally declared she was going to see her family. It had been years since she'd seen her aunt and uncle and their children. She prayed they were still in the house where she'd last visited. She'd barely slept, had barely been able to think or feel things like hunger or exhaustion, thanks to the thoughts wreaking havoc within her. The healer, with her lack of answers, hadn't soothed her. And with no formal meeting scheduled with the Coggin or his children today?
I can entertain myself, you know,
Kaol said, setting his book on his lap, as Nezrin again looked to the foyer door.
I'd join you if I could.
You will soon be able to, she promised. The healer had seemed skilled enough, despite her refusal to even give them a shred of hope. If the woman couldn't help them, then Nezrin would find another, and another. Even if she had to beg the healer on high to help.
Go, Nezrin, Kaol ordered. You'll get no peace until you do.
She rubbed her neck, then rose from her spot on the golden couch and strode over to him. Braced her hands on either arm of his chair, currently positioned by the open garden doors. She brought her face close to his, closer than it had been in days. His own eyes seemed brighter, somehow, a smidge better than yesterday. I'll come back as soon as I can. He gave her a quiet smile.
Take your time. See your family.
He had not seen his mother or brother in years, he'd told her. His father. Kaol did not talk about his father. Perhaps, she said quietly, we could get an answer for the healer. He blinked at her. She murmured, about the completion. That fast, the light winked out from his eyes. She withdrew quickly. He'd stopped her on the boat when she'd practically leaped atop him. And seeing him without his shirt earlier, those muscles rippling along his back, his stomach. She'd almost begged the healer to let her do the inspecting. Pathetic. Though she'd never been particularly good at avoiding her cravings. She'd started sleeping with him that summer because she didn't see the point in resisting where her interest tugged her. Even if she hadn't cared for him. Not as she did now. Nezrin slid a hand through her hair. I'll be back by dinner. Kaol waved her off, and was already reading his book again when she left the room. They had made no promises, she reminded herself. She knew his tendencies drove him to want to do right by her, to honor her. And this summer, when that castle had collapsed and she'd thought him dead, she had never known such fear. She had never prayed as she had in those moments, until Aelin's flame spared her from death. And Nezrin had prayed that she had spared him, too. Nezrin shut out the thoughts of those days as she strode through the palace halls, vaguely remembering where to find the gates to the city proper. What she'd thought she wanted, what was most important, or had been, until the Coggin had uttered the news. She had left her family. She should have been there, to protect the children, protect her aging father, her fierce and laughing sister. Captain Falik? Nezrin halted at the pleasant voice, at the title she was still barely accustomed to answering. She was standing at one of the palace crossroads, the path ahead to take her to the front gates if she kept going straight. She had marked every exit they'd passed on the way in. And at the end of the hallway that bisected hers was Sartak. Gone were the fine clothes of yesterday. The prince now wore close-fitting leathers, the shoulders capped with simple yet sturdy armor, reinforced at the wrists, knees, and shins.
no breastplate. His long black hair had been braided back, a thin strap of leather tying it off. She bowed deeply, lower than she would have for the other children of the Khagan. But for a rumored heir apparent, who might one day be Otterlin's ally, if they survived. "You were in a hurry," Sartak said, noting the hall she'd been striding down.
I have family in the city. I was going to see them. She added half-heartedly, "Unless your highness has need of me."
A wry smile graced his face, and she realized she'd replied in her own tongue. Their tongue. "I'm headed for a ride on Kadara, my rook," he clarified, falling into his language as well.
"I know," she said. "I've heard the stories."
"Even in Otterlin?" He lifted a brow. A warrior and a charmer. A dangerous combination, though she could not recall any mention of a spouse.
Indeed, no ring marked his finger. "Even in Otterlin," Nezrin said, though she did not mention that the average person on the street might not know such tales.
"But in her household?"
"Oh, yes. The Winged Prince, they called him."
"May I escort you? The streets are a maze, even to me."
It was a generous offer. An honor. "I would not keep you from the skies." If only because she did not know how to talk to such men, born and bred to power, used to fine ladies and scheming politicians. Though his rook riders, legend claimed, could come from anywhere.
"Kadara is accustomed to waiting," Sartak said. "At least let me lead you to the gates. There is a new guard out today, and I will tell them to mark your face so you may be let back in."
Because with her clothes, her unadorned hair. Indeed, the guards might not permit her past, which would have been mortifying. "Thank you," she said, and fell into step beside him. They were silent as they passed white banners streaming from one of the open windows. Kaol had told her yesterday of Caution's worry that their youngest sister's death had been through foul play, that one of Parrington's agents might be responsible. It was enough to plant a seed of dread in her, to make her mark each face she encountered, peer into every shadow. Keeping a smooth pace beside him, Nezrin glanced at Sartak as those banners flitted by. The prince, however, nodded to a few bowing men and women in the gold robes of viziers. Nezrin found herself asking, "Are there truly 36 of them?"
"We have a fascination with the number, so yes,"
he snorted, the sound most unprincely.
"My father debated having them, but feared the god's wrath more than political repercussions."
It felt like a breath of crisp autumn air, to hear and speak her own tongue, to have it be the norm and not be gawked at. She'd always felt so when coming here.
"Did Lord Westfall meet with the healer?"
There was no harm in the truth, she decided, so Nezrin said, "Yes, Irene Towers."
"Ah, the famed Golden Lady."
"Oh?"
"She is striking, no?"
Nezrin smiled slightly. "You favor her, I see."
Sartak chuckled. "Oh, I wouldn't dare. My brother Cashin would not be pleased."
"They have an attachment?" Hassar had hinted at as much.
"They are friends, or were. I haven't seen them talk in months, but who knows what happened. Though I suppose I'm no better than the court gossips for telling you."
"It's still useful to know, if we are working with her."
"Was her assessment of Lord Westfall a positive one?"
Nezrin shrugged. "She was hesitant to confirm."
"Many healers will do that. They don't like to give hope and take it away."
He flicked his braid over a shoulder.
"Though I will also tell you that Irene herself healed one of Cashin's Dargon riders last winter, of a very similar injury. And the healers have long repaired such wounds amongst our people's horse tribes and my own Rukin. They will know what to do."
Nezrin swallowed the hope that blossomed as brightness flared ahead,
the open doors to the main courtyard and palace gates.
How long have you been a Rook rider, Prince?
I thought you'd heard the stories. Humor danced in his face.
Only gossip. I prefer the truth.
Sartak's dark eyes settled on her, their unwavering focus enough to make her glad not to be on the receiving end of it too often. Not for fear, but it was unsettling to have the weight of that gaze wholly upon you. It was an eagle's gaze, a rook's gaze, keen and piercing.
I was 12 when my father brought us all to the mountain Airy. And when I snuck away and climbed onto the captain's own rook, soaring into the skies and requiring them to chase me down, my father told me that if I had splattered on the rocks, I would have deserved to die for my stupidity. As punishment, he ordered me to live amongst the Rookin until I could prove I wasn't a complete fool. A lifetime, he suggested.
Nezrin quietly laughed and blinked against the sunshine as they emerged into the grand courtyard. Ornate arches and pillars had been carved with flora and fauna, the palace rising up behind them like a leviathan.
Thankfully, I did not die of stupidity, and instead came to love the riding, their lifestyle. They gave me hell because I was a prince, but I proved my mettle soon enough. Kadara hatched when I was 15, and I raised her myself. I have had no other mount since.
Pride and affection brightened those onyx eyes. And yet Nezrin and Kaol would ask him, beg him, to take that beloved mount into battle against wyverns many times the weight and with infinitely more brute strength, with venom in their tails. Her stomach roiled. They reached the towering main gates, a small door cut into the enormous slabs of studded bronze, left open to allow access to pedestrians scurrying on errands to and from the palace. Nezrin remained still, while Sartak introduced her to the heavily armed guards on duty, ordering them to grant her unrestricted access. The sun glinted on the hilts of the swords crossed over their backs, as the guards bowed their acquiescence, each with a fist over his heart. She'd seen how Kaol could barely look at them, the palace guards, and those at the docks. Sartak led her through the small door, the bronze of the gate nearly a foot thick, and onto the broad cobblestoned avenue that sloped into the labyrinth of city streets. Fine houses and more guards lined the surrounding streets, residences of the wealthy who wished to dwell in the palace's shadow. But the street itself was crammed with people about their business or leisure, even some travelers who climbed all the way up here to gawk at the palace, and now tried to peer through the small door through which Nezrin and Sartak had walked, for a glimpse to the courtyard beyond. None seemed to recognize the prince beside her, though she knew the guards on the street and stationed at the gates monitored every breath and word. One glance at Sartak, and she had no doubt the prince was also well aware of his surroundings while he stood beyond the gates, as if he were an ordinary man. She studied the crowded streets ahead, listening to the clamor. It would take an hour on foot to reach her family's house across the city, but even longer in a carriage or on horseback thanks to the clogged traffic.
Are you sure you don't need an escort?
A half-smile tugged on Nezrin's mouth as she found him watching her sidelong.
I can handle myself, Prince, but I thank you for the honor.
Sartak looked her over, a quick warrior's assessment. Indeed, he was a man who had little to fear when stepping beyond the palace walls.
If you ever have the time or interest, you should come for a ride. The air up there is open, not like the dust and brine down here.
Open enough where listening ears might not hear them. Nezrin bowed deeply.
I should like that very much.
She felt the prince still watching while she strode down the sunny avenue, dodging carts and conveyances fighting for passage. But she didn't dare look back. She wasn't entirely sure why.
Chapter 7 Kaol waited until Nezrin had been gone for a good 30 minutes before he summoned Kaja, She'd been waiting in the exterior hallway and slipped inside his suite mere moments after he'd called.